Hello everyone, welcome to this episode of the Total Football Analysis Premier League podcast. If you've been following us along, you'll know that we've been doing a couple of series on a bunch of teams that we thought in contention to qualify for Europe. So that was what the last two episodes were about. And we've got a similar sort of series lined up for the next couple of episodes as well. But before I get into all of that, I hope you've been enjoying what we've been putting out on the podcast so far. Please let us know if there's anything you want us to cover on the analysis podcast. And do check us out on your streaming method of choice, because we cover not just the Premier League, but the Bundesliga, La Liga, women's football, and there is an overarching sort of general tactical analysis podcast that we have going on as well. So basically, we cover any sort of tactical analytical need that you could have from most of the major leagues in football. So do check us out on streaming media of your choice, you know, Spotify, Apple Music. We do post these episodes on our website as well, which is www.totalfootballanalysis.com. And obviously, there is a lot of analytical content that we put out on the website on a daily basis, covering almost every major league in Europe and elsewhere. So do check us out on the website and let us know if there's anything you want us to cover, whether it's on the podcast itself or as an analysis piece on the website, and we'll be happy to do so. We're on Twitter as well, and our Twitter handle is @TotalAnalysis. You can let us know anything, any feedback you have about the podcast or the website in general. Please let us know, and we'd be more than happy to incorporate that. So having said that, as I was saying, we have been doing a series on the European contenders in the Premier League and what their tactics are like and how that might sort of help them to make a push for the European places. And we've got a similar series this time around, where for the next couple of episodes, this one and the next one, we're going to be looking at the teams which are threatened with relegation from the Premier League. And it's a similar sort of concept where we will be looking at the teams we feel are in a relegation fight and what their tactics have been like so far this season and how they could help or hinder them in their fight to survive in the Premier League. So this week we're looking at three teams, and we'll probably look at two or three teams in the next episode as well. So I've got one of our usual guests on as my guest for this episode, and that is Mac, all the way from Hong Kong. He's on the line.
Yeah. And
hey, Mac.
Hi.
So, yeah, as I was just telling everyone, we are covering the relegation threatened sides in the Premier League for the next couple of episodes. And we've got the first side we're going to look at is the side that's been bottom for quite a while, but I think most football watchers or experts agree that it's probably the best side to be bottom of the Premier League ever since the inception of the Premier League. And that, of course, is Norwich City. They've played some really good, attacking, exciting football since they've been promoted. They've stuck to their sort of ideals and since they've been promoted from the Championship, but that doesn't look like it's helped them too much in the sense that they're still bottom. But Mac here will give us a bit of an insight into how they've been playing, what their tactics are like, and whether there is any hope for them to survive. So over to you, Mac. What do you think?
Yeah, you mentioned the playing style of Norwich City, and some people may call their approach naive because, yeah, the results doesn't reflect their playing ability or playing style. But I think playing out from the backs is just a very rough tactical concept. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean naive or doesn't mean anything. Because if you recall, in 2011 to 2012, Swansea City under Brendan Rodgers, a promotion side, they also played out from the back and achieved remarkable results to stay in the Premier League. If you look at that time, Swansea City, their players, for their front line, they only got maybe Scott Sinclair, Nathan Dyer, Danny Graham, or for the defensive line, Ashley Williams, Anko Ranko. For their players, they are not really that very big names or very talented, were very strong players, but they managed to stay in the Premier League with their approach in the Championship. So is this playing out from the back thing used by the newly promoted team, is that naive? I don't think so. But there's some problem within Norwich City, and I'm going to first to pick out the biggest problem is their build-up problems or their offensive problems. So everyone knows that Norwich City likes to play out from the back. They used a very similar squad from the last year. Most players play under Daniel Farke in the championship last season. For the build-up shape, mainly there were two patterns. The center backs usually they are Grant Hanley and Ben Godfrey in this season and recently, and they split wide, separate very far away from each other, and they play a double pivot, and they left usually it was Tete to stay in front of the center backs. So in those cases, they are playing out with like a triangle shape, so a 2-1, and then they push their fullbacks high. And in those cases, when they are trying to move the ball, it's not very effective because, I mean, Tete is not the best option when playing as a sole pivot to build up from the back. Sometimes he was marked, and the results or the consequences just for the two center backs, Hanley and Godfrey, they just exchange the ball and going long and without finding Tete or other players. And usually, therefore, when the coach see this happen, he will order another pivot, also the defensive midfielder, to drop deeper to form a box shape as the build-up shape. Recently, the role was filled by McLean. So the build-up shape was, for the first line, it was formed by Hanley and Godfrey, and then the second line is formed by Tete and McLean. This was a box shape, but the problem is similar because personally, I don't think the Norwich City defenders, especially the centre backs, have enough ball playing ability. So even though they are facing a 4-3-3 situation, and they have a numerical advantage, but they can't utilize their advantage because they really can't find the pivots to build up because they are marked. And for the center backs, they do not have the ability to play a very precise penetrating passes or vertical passes to break the press. So they immediately go long under pressure, and that's ineffective because in the front line, they mainly play Timu Pukki or maybe Todd Cantwell or Emu Buendia. And these players are not target men. They do not have physical strength, and it was ineffective to let them fight for the ball in the air. So in those cases, they are not playing out from the back very smoothly. And if we count the goalkeeper, Tim Crew, as one of the building up players, and yeah, we all know maybe Tim Crew is a good keeper to save penalty, and he have good reflexes. Especially at the times at Newcastle, but I think playing up from the backs or using his foot, I mean, his goal kicking ability was not the best in terms of a goalkeeper. So mainly the build up was quite, I think, ineffective because they are not achieving what they want because the intensity and physicality of the Premier League is much higher than the Championship. And yeah, I just mentioned if the center backs cannot find the pivots or the dropping players, they will go long. And because I also explained the physical deficits of the front players, so when the Norwich City back players, they try to play long, the long balls are more space orientated rather than man orientated. I mean, they won't find Timu Pukki to be the target man because it's not work. It doesn't work. And so they would, for the long balls, they try to attack the flanks because they've got maybe Jamal Lewis or Max Aarons on both flanks. And I think this is the biggest or the most effective ways for them to reach the final third because it simplified things and it broke the press more easier. So I think in the offense, the major playing style is like this. And if you look at the goals or the goals scored by Timo Pukki, you will find out that only maybe below 5 goals are coming from the build-up approach of the team. And mainly they are scoring from other occasions, maybe win of the second ball or the offensive transition or penalties. It's not the build-up to bring them the goals. And also, okay, you may think about that. What if the box shape or the triangular shape of the build-up phase was blocked, or they do not have the numerical advantage? So will they drop the front players, I mean, the attacking midfielder, left winger, right winger, to into the build-up phase to add an extra man to carry the ball away? I think they do not have this option because, of course, we know that Todd Cantwell or Buendia, they will drop to the build-up phase. But the problem is the body orientations, these aren't right, because when they dropped from the front line, their back is faced to the goal. So they don't know what's happening behind them, and they cannot progress the ball. They merely have to return the ball to the center back, and it repeats and repeats and repeats, and just let the center back kick the ball away. For the fullbacks, I think Jamal Lewis and Max Aarons are good players. But what's the problem? The problem is, I think they're good players, but they are not really strong to dominate a flank. I mean, you can release both of them to attack flanks, but the effectiveness or efficiency wasn't that high, because, for example, in the box, they do not have the target man like Pukki or other players to attack the box. And for the crosses, they lack options sometimes. And if the center backs try to find the left back or the right back in the build-up phases, and they will find that's also the same problem. The body orientation of the fullbacks aren't right, because they tended to drop deep, and when in the dropping movement always forced the players back to the goal. And that's the problem, because again, they do not know what's happening behind them. And in terms of finishing, I think Norwich isn't effective enough, because for the XG per game, expected goals per game, they got a 1.23 figures. So it means they are supposed to score more than 1 goals in every game. But the reality is they only have 0.86 goals on average for every game. So they are underperforming for most cases. I mean, they cannot convert their chances to make this problem become bigger. Just an additional point to get to the build-up phase. I mean, for Norwich, the passes, only one-third of the passes were forward passes, and the others were lateral or backward passes. That's not too good. And the build-up problems caused the defensive issue of the team, because they try to play out from the back, push their fullbacks high, and here comes the problem, because both fullbacks leave huge spaces behind them because they were pushing high, and those spaces behind them, they were uncovered, and these become the main source of the opponents to hit during the offensive transition. And again, when they lost the ball upfield, because they push everyone high, they feel it's very difficult to deal with the large quantity of defensive transition, because the first fullbacks were exposed, and defensively during the 1v1 situations, just like we mentioned last time, in those cases you need to have a very good center backs to remain calm and deal with the striker or attacking players even alone. But none of the Norwich City players are doing enough in terms of 1v1 defending. Also, the defensive pivots, I mean, McLean or Tete, they are not covering enough. I mean, maybe this job is a little bit difficult because they have to monitor a lot of things, players, the space behind. And I mean, merely playing these four players, leaving these four players at the back is not enough to keep them safe in the defensive transition. And just for one more point, is to elaborate on the 1v1 situation, because I think a problem of Norwich's defense is they conceded a lot of crosses. You know, in this Premier League season, they conceded 19.14 crosses in every game. Sometimes it was a structural problem, because or lack of communication. Because when, for example, when the fullbacks try to step out, the center backs or the defensive pivots are not following. So the fullbacks was isolated. As we said, their 1v1 was not really that good, and that gave the opponent to cross. For other cases, maybe the fullbacks and the pivots or the center backs, they are marking the same players. And so, I mean, they tuck inside in the box and no one are going to cover the wide areas, because maybe Cantwell or Buendia, they are just covering the wide spaces not very often. So here comes the opportunities for the opponents to cross. Their poor exchange on the targets to mark is a big problem, because they are conceding too many crosses. And if we go to individually, we also knew that they have good players, Buendia or Cantwell, but the prerequisite to release their ability is to get them on the ball when they face to the goal, not back to the goal. Because as we mentioned, on most occasions, these players, when they are dropping, they do not have the ability do not have the vision to look at the pitch or have everything in their mind. They have to return the ball. They seldom turn, because also again they lack the physical strength. So their ability was not fully utilized, because they are not facing the goal. And if you give them space and time to face the goal, they can give you maybe penetrating passes or through passes between the defenders. And that's the problem of Norwich have to solve, because they cannot just let the wide fullbacks to attack. They have to get the best players on the ball, and that's what they needed. And Lewis and Aarons, I think both players are okay in terms of an attacking centre backs, but problem is they do not produce good quality out balls to the centre. I mean, they can produce crosses, or they can carry the ball forward, but if you want the players to move the ball from the flank back to the central areas where Norwich have the best players, using these fullbacks are not enough, because when they get the ball, they can really go forward or go backward, but they cannot produce a decisive in ball to get the ball to their best players. I think it's difficult for them. For Teemu Pukki, he's a top goal scorer of the championship last season, but now I think he's had too much job to do, because on most occasions he has to drop deep, he has to try to turn, he has to take care of the offensive transition. It's a little bit difficult to do this. He struggled to deal with the high intensity of the Premier League, because if you look into the aerial deals percentage, he merely have a 5.9 success rate in those aerial deals in this season. So I think that's not good enough in terms of attackment or something. But I think if he plays like a poacher, he do not have sufficient support or chances to shoot, because his teammates did not create enough for him. So I think it's a complex problem of Norwich. I think the offensive problem lead to the defensive problem, and I think it's very difficult to solve by the manager, because personally, I think some players are not good enough, and individually, that's a problem, and this directly related to the tactical philosophy of the manager, and I don't think he will change hugely. So I think Norwich are, yeah, that's all for Norwich.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the table, they were 6 points from safety. Down at the bottom with 21 points. And you have West Ham, Watford and Bournemouth all on 27. So realistically, it is difficult. They've got 9 games and it's a 6-point gap. So I probably agree with you in that it might just be a little bit too much for them to survive. But just a couple of statistics as well, which I was looking up which are interesting. So as you said, they have massively underperformed their XG. And if you look at it from a total over the season point of view, they've scored 25 goals, which is the lowest in the division. But their XG total points at them having scored 32 goals. So they're about 7 goals short on that metric, which clearly tells you that there is a problem with regard to finishing of the chances that they are creating at the club. Because, I mean, another team, if you were to look at Newcastle, for example, they've scored 25 goals. They're the joint lowest in the division with Norwich for goals scored. But that is in line with Newcastle's XG. Newcastle's XG total is at 26. So Newcastle are barely creating any chances. But Norwich, on the other hand, have created some good opportunities and good chances for their team. But they've not been finished, basically. So there is a bit of a problem with regard to finishing of those chances at the club. And again, just if I were to look at it, a couple of other statistics as well, which are extremely interesting, is that if you look at shots, for example, Norwich have taken more shots this season than Arsenal have. And if you look at passes, like total number of passes that have been made by teams, Norwich are ninth in the division for passes. They've made more passes than Everton, Bournemouth, who are generally considered progressive teams. At least Everton were till Ancelotti came in. They've gone slightly more direct under him. But even so, they're a team that's ninth in the league for passes. They've taken more shots than Arsenal, but they're still at the bottom of the league, right at the bottom, propping up the rest of the league. So while, as Max said, their tactics have been you can praise them for their tactics, but I think they've lacked a bit in terms of execution. And it's basically that step up to the Premier League that has proven to be a little bit difficult for them to manage. And it's that those fine margins due to which they're probably down at the bottom. And it's an extremely difficult task, I think, for them to be able to get out of the relegation zone. So, yeah, so that's what we think about Norwich's sort of their tactical setup and what we think whether they'll be able to get out or not. And moving on to the next team we're covering today, and that is Watford, who are at the moment 17th, just outside the bottom three on goal difference, level with West Ham and Bournemouth, as mentioned earlier, on 27 points. So they're just outside the bottom three on goal difference. And they're quite interesting, actually. And we actually, the Total Football Analysis magazine back a couple of months ago had an issue on Watford's sort of resurgence under Nigel Pearson, because it was a resurgence at that point of time. They had just beaten Manchester United in a headline sort of result for them towards the end of December. And they'd also picked up a couple of other wins, and they were looking like they were going to be able to sort of mount a charge up the table. But their form has sort of gone up and down, and they are, as we see, they are 17th at the moment. But a couple of weeks ago, they did pick up a statement victory over Liverpool, where they beat Liverpool 3-0 and then contrived to lose to Crystal Palace 1-0. So it's literally been a rollercoaster ride for Watford, it's still better than what it was like under the previous management, where they were really struggling. And Pearson has at least given them a bit of a jolt in terms of their tactics, and they are in with a chance to survive this season. And again, if I were to look at it from a formation and tactical point of view, under Kike Sanchez-Flores, Watford were mainly lining up with a back three in a sort of 5-3-2 formation. And the moment Pearson came in, he changed that, and they've been setting up with a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-4-1-1, depending on where you think the wingers are positioned, whether they're high up the pitch or whether they're in line with the midfielders. But he's basically gone to a back four with two central midfielders, two wingers, and one sort of attacking midfielder supporting a lone striker. And that's been their formation for every game under Pearson. And what that has done is, I look at it first from an attacking point of view, where it has helped them, because it's allowed Abdoulaye Doucouré, who plays that attacking midfielder role, it's given him the freedom to go on and attack, basically. Whereas earlier, under Flores, he was part of the two or three man midfield, and that's not really his best sort of position, because he's not the best at his defensive duties. He is sort of classed as a box to box midfielder, but he does his best work in the in the final third in the opposition's sort of near the opposition's penalty area. And this tactical change, where you've usually seen Will Hughes and Etienne Capoue in the two central midfield positions, has allowed Doucouré to get forward a lot more. And his attacking numbers have gone up under Pearson. He's scored, I think, 3 goals and has provided a couple of assists in the sort of about 10-odd games that Pearson has had under in charge of Watford, whereas he had just 1 goal under Flores for the entirety of the season before that, which was about 16 matches. So his attacking output has gone up definitely, and that has helped Watford to claim a few points here and there, and has increased their goal output as well. And that, again, if I was to look at the statistics from an expected goals point of view, from a complete season point of view, like if you were to look at their numbers for this entire season so far, Watford are similar to Norwich in that they have also been underperforming their XG massively. They have scored 27 goals, where the XG models say that they should have scored 37. So that's by 10 goals that they've underperformed their expected goals numbers for this season. But if you sort of break it down into what it was like before Pearson and since he's come in, you can see that underperformance has largely been during the time that Quique Sanchez-Flores was in charge of the club, where their XG before, for the 16 games, league games, where Flores was in charge, was 18.4, but they had scored only 9 goals during that time. And even in terms of the XGA, which is the XG against, basically the expected goals that you are, the goals that you are expected to concede, they had conceded 30 goals in those 16 games, but their XGA for that period was 24.7. So they were underperforming both on an attacking and from a defensive point of view. But since Pearson has come in, they've matched or outperformed their XG numbers during that period of time. So he has definitely brought about a difference in their attacking and defensive play. So while one change that the formational shift has brought about is to liberate Abdoulaye Doucouré, what it's also done is has allowed them to be off the ball when they do not have possession. It's allowed them to be a lot more compact between the lines. They drop into two banks of four almost immediately after they lose possession. Although it needs to be said that they do press quite high up the pitch at times, their PPDA numbers, which basically indicates pressing intensity, have improved slightly under Pearson, but it's been more or less stable over the two regimes, over Flores and Pearson. But they do at times press high up the pitch depending on the opposition. But if that does not work out, they immediately go back and fall back into a mid block and look to defend the box. And they stay extremely narrow and compact, defending the width of the box. They're extremely happy to let opposition teams try and send in crosses and sort of have the wide areas, but they try and defend the width of the box. And this sort of tactic was extremely evident during that 3-0 win over Liverpool, where it was almost a 6-3-1 that they formed without the ball, where both the wingers also came back and sort of supported the fullbacks to track Liverpool's fullbacks, because we all know that Liverpool's fullbacks also like to get forward a lot. So the two wingers, who were Ismail Assar and Gerard Deulofeu on the day, were tracking Liverpool's fullbacks, Alexander-Arnold and Robertson. So it was a 6-3-1 that they were forming with absolutely no space in the middle of the pitch. And they also, like I said, when they do press, they do so at times, but they do so intelligently. And during that game, they were pressing Dejan Lovren because they saw that he was the weak link. Whenever Lovren got the ball, was the pressing trigger for Doucouré and Deeney, who were the two players up front, to try and pressure him on the ball. And that was, during that game at least, that was the only time they were pressing high up the pitch. Otherwise, it was a deep block. I wouldn't even call it a mid block. It was more of a deep block. But yeah, so depending on the opposition, they sort of transition from a mid block to a deep block or vice versa. But that's basically been the strategy from a defensive point of view, where they try and stay compact between the lines and essentially defend the width of the box. And offensively, they have, apart from the freedom that Dukoura has been given, they have gone a lot more direct. And that is also to do with the fact that, at least up until Delafeu's injury, which has ruled him out for the rest of the season, they had two of the most sort of direct and pacey wingers in the division with Delafeu and Ismail Assar on the right. Where now Assar is also, if you see, has been reintegrated into the team since Pearson has come in, and he's been an absolute revelation on the right-hand flank. And Delafeu and Assar in tandem are an extremely direct sort of combination of wingers, where Delafeu is probably one of the best dribblers in the division, and Assar is similarly adept at getting one-on-one with the opposition defender. So that would allow them to carry the ball up the pitch quickly and win fouls or try and isolate defenders one-on-one. And again, statistics bear this out, where their long pass percentage from under Flores to under Pearson has gone up by almost more than 2.5%. It was about 13.3% under the previous regime, and it's gone up to close to 16% under Pearson. So they do play a lot of direct long balls. And again, I will look at the game against Liverpool as a template for this as well, because the moment they won back possession in that game, they targeted the wider areas behind the Liverpool fullbacks for a quick ball into the flanks, which was then chased by Deeney or one of the wingers on that flank. And they would try and get in behind the Liverpool defense in a very quick and direct manner. So it's the complete, I wouldn't say complete, but it's quite an opposite to the way Norwich play, in the sense that it's a lot more direct. They don't try and make too many passes. It's basically to try and regain possession and hit the opposition as quickly as possible. And again, statistically, Watford are have made the fourth least passes in the division this season, which again tells you how direct they've been. So from a tactical point of view, that's basically been their philosophy, especially under Pearson, is to stay compact and deny the opposition space between the lines. And then when the ball has been won back, quickly hit the opposition on the counter with direct passes into the flanks, or to use Deeney as a target man, which he's extremely adept at. So he can hold off defenders and play the ball into either the wingers or Dukoure, on, you know, who would be making the run past him. So that is basically been their philosophy or their system from both a defensive and an attacking point of view. I mean, there have been variations where at times defensively it'll either be a 4-4-2 where Deeney and Dukoure are forming a front two and trying to block off passing lanes to the opposition central midfielders, or if that is not working out, we've seen Dukoure drop into midfield and form a 4-5-1 as well, with Deeney being the sole sort of outlet up front, where and Watford try to again constrict space in the center. So that's basically variations on a theme, but largely it's basically been their attempt to try and stop the opposition making attacks through the center and to sort of funnel them out wide. So yeah, from a tactical point of view, that's how Watford have gone. And if you were to look at the table as well, like I said, they're just outside the table on goal difference, but I think they have a better chance than most of surviving, especially because some of the other teams are not really taking their chance to move clear of the relegation battle. And the fact that other teams are not sort of doing all they can or taking their opportunities, along with the fact that Watford probably have enough quality, although their hopes have been dented a little by the fact that Delafeu has been ruled out for the season, and his replacement, it's usually been Roberto Pereira, who's been playing on the left. He's not the same kind of player. He's not a direct, pacey winger who's good at one-on-one situations. He's more of an attacking midfielder who is good at sort of picking up space between the lines, and maybe he is a bit direct, but he's nowhere close to what Delafeu could offer them. So they have lost that sort of penetration. So it's a lot there's a lot more responsibility now on Sarr and Deeney to score the goals and provide the penetration for Watford to stay up. So it remains to be seen how that goes. But they probably have a better chance than most if they can sort out their form. And it's given the fact that it's so tight at the bottom, any team which goes on even a mini run of two or three games without a defeat or so will probably pull clear and sort of be able to avoid relegation. And that's where I think Watford are at the moment. They just need to put together a run of two to three, maybe four games. And they have the team to do that and the fixtures as well. If you were to look at the fixtures as well, their last two games are difficult. They face Manchester City and Arsenal in their last two games of the league season. But up until then, they've got Leicester up next. They face Burnley, Southampton. What could probably be a crucial six-pointer against Norwich midway through April. So they actually face Norwich, Newcastle and West Ham before those two games between City and, against City and Arsenal. So again, those three games against their potential relegation rivals are probably what will decide whether they stay up or not. And I think they have the team and the tactics, as we said, because they sit deep and they counter at pace. They have the tactics, I think, to survive. And it'll be interesting to see, though, whether they manage to do that. But we think they have that sort of tactical foundation, at least, to be able to make a good fight of it. So that's what we thought of Watford, at least, in terms of coverage and where they might be able to survive because of that particular tactical philosophy that they've had since Pearson came in. And we're covering one more team for today's podcast, and that is Brighton, who, again, like Norwich, have had an extremely expansive style of play, which has been a complete switch from what it was under Chris Hughton last season. Graham Potter has completely overhauled the playing style, and they've become a very possession-intensive and dominant team on the ball, but they're still struggling towards the bottom of the table. As we said earlier, they are... Brighton are on 29 points. They're 2 points clear off the drop zone at the moment, but it's only 2 points. So one bad result could pull them back into the relegation zone. So, Mac, what do you think about Brighton?
When comparing Brighton and Norwich, I think there are some similarities because Brighton changed the manager to Graham Potter in the beginning of the season. I think both managers are trying to play out from the back, or at least abandon the traditional English football. They try to keep the ball in the first phase of the attack for at least a while, and that makes the attack more organized. And for Brighton, I think I would try to make a little bit comparison on Brighton and the Norwich cases, as I mentioned before. And for Brighton, they also try to play off and back, and mainly the centre backs are played by Lewis Dunk or Webster. They have also some, I think, quite good central midfielders or pivots, you can say, in front of the centre backs. I mean, David Proper or Pascal Gross or maybe Aaron Moy or Bissouma, and these players form the build up phase with the centre backs. And for the full backs, Dan Burn or Montoya, they were also pushed high to attack or occupy the wide channels. And I think the biggest difference of Norwich and Brighton is the ability of individual, because for the centre backs, Lewis Dunk, this player, he can produce the penetrating passes or through passes between the defenders, or a promising vertical passes to find the front players. Because when you are playing off from the back, you try to invite pressure, win more spaces, and maybe even the numerical equality or advantage in higher spaces. So you need to break the press. And Norwich didn't do too well to break the press, but for Brighton with Lewis Dunk or maybe David Proper, they can break the press and start an attack. And for the fullbacks, I think because Bissouma or the pivots, they will cover the space behind the fullbacks when they step out, and this gives the freedom for the ball, for the fullbacks to attack, and that makes Brighton have the flexibility to attack at flanks. And if they are going at the center, they have Aaron Moy or again Proper or Pascal Gross as a creative sources to attack, and they can create something. And for the front players, they bought Mupe from the Championship, from Brentford this summer, and he became the top scorer of the team with 8 goals. But the problem is they do not have another striker to ease the burden of Mupe, because the second top scorer is Lindro Trossard. He just scored 3 goals this season only, and given Mupe has scored 8 and the 5 goal difference are quite large. And another player who scored 3 goals is Adam Webster. Webster is a centre back, and you can see the front players are not scoring enough for Brighton. This may be a problem, because sometimes you will feel that it's time to change, but maybe Connolly or Murray or again Trussard, they are not scoring enough, and this gives Brighton the problem. Mainly defensively, I think Brighton are reluctant to press very high, because especially recently, because they are trying to form a mid block to deny the penetrations and try to stay compact. And I think that's doing quite well, because they may not have the personnel to press very high, and that's a wise approach to keep the defense compact. And for the center backs, in terms of defending, I think Lewis Dunn or Adam Webster are better than the Norwich pairs. So yeah, that's my thoughts on Brighton, and I think they have a better chance to survive in the Premier League, because when you see David Proper to hold the ball or to compare with Tete or McLean, you will feel that the standard of these players are really Premier League players. They are very good, or they have the calm and composure to deal with the pressure and make a good pass or release the ball to the right players. I mean, they are quite good in those situations. So I think Brighton, although they are not very effective in front of goal or very lethal in their attack, but I think they are quite promising. So I think they still have to get more familiar with Graham Potter's tactics, but so far I think they should be achieving even more than this. So yeah, that's all my thoughts on Brighton. How about you?
No, yeah, I completely agree that they probably should be achieving more than they have this season. And there has been a bit of backlash from fans because of the struggle that it's been, and because of the fact that they are in a bit of a relegation fight again, which Potter was brought in to move them away from. But this sort of evolution takes time, and especially something so drastic as the sort of football that was played under Chris Hughton to this, where it's a complete change. It's a diametrically opposite style of play that's been brought in. And you're right in terms of the quality of player as well. I mean, you spoke about Davy Proper. He starts for the Netherlands, one of the best countries in Europe and probably the world in terms of the depth that they have now. The Netherlands are also improving, have also come back from the debacle that they've been in over the last couple of years. So he starts in midfield for the Netherlands, and that should tell you his quality. And they definitely have a better caliber of player than Norwich, but they've also been forced to fall back on some of the players that Potter probably wanted to discard towards the start of the season, where Glenn Murray and Shane Duffy are the two biggest examples who were immediately benched. Adam Webster is a £20 million signing from the Championship from Bristol City. Neil Maupay, brought in for a similar amount from Brentford, were Potter's favoured players to replace them in the lineup. But we've seen Murray being used increasingly as the season has gone on, because Maupay, even though he is the top scorer, is not as reliable a finisher as Murray has been. And even at the back, we've seen Duffy play a few times instead of Webster, or alongside Webster and Dunk, when Brighton have played with a back three at times as well this season. So you've seen Potter having to sort of mix and match a little bit in terms of the players he's using because they have not been as effective as he wanted them to be in terms of the replacements he brought in and who he wanted to sort of immediately come in and make an impact. And another interesting thing tactically is also that they've played Dan Byrne a lot at left back, who is a 6'7". He is a center back. He's not a left back. He's 6'7" and he's played primarily, most notably for Fulham, as a center back. But Potter has played him at left back, but that's basically been so that they can have a back three in possession where Montoya on the right is the one who goes forward and joins the attack, but Byrne usually stays back and they form a back three with Webster and Dunk. And even at and during the occasions when he has started with three centre backs, where he's brought in Duffy to play alongside the other two, it's been Bernardo who's played at left wing back. So Bernardo hasn't really played at left back; he's played at left wing back. Dan Byrne is the player who's played at left back, but it's essentially as the third sort of centre back. So they tighten in the build up phase usually to try and keep a back three with the right back Montoya going forward to join the attack and the pivots trying to provide the sort of penetration through the center with Moy, Pascal Gross, as you mentioned, sort of providing that trying to provide the penetration through the center of the pitch, which they have sort of struggled at a little bit as well. And again, statistically, they've scored 32 goals. The XG total puts it at 39. So again, a similar story where they're underperforming the XG total. But from a goals conceded point of view, they've conceded 40 goals, whereas the XG numbers would say that they should have conceded 45 goals. So they've actually done well from a defensive point of view for the season. And that tells you that his methods are working. They've not given Brighton instant success, but they are working. And another, again, while looking at the stats, this particular one absolutely jumped out at me is the fact that if you look at the total number of passes made this season, they've made the fifth highest number of passes in the division. They've made more passes in the league this season than Manchester United, Spurs and Arsenal. The only teams to have outpassed them are City, Liverpool, Chelsea and Leicester, basically the current top four. So that tells you in how sort of ingrained and how loyal to his philosophy, you can say, that Potter is in the sense in that they've outpassed every team bar the top four this season. But the fact that we spoke about them underperforming the XG and not scoring enough is again borne out through the numbers, because they're only about ninth for shots taken in the league, and they've scored, as I said earlier, they've scored 32 goals, whereas the XG would have them at 39. So they've struggled to convert the possession they've had into penetration. They've lacked that cutting edge, which is what I think they need to find in the summer window for next season. But as Max said, I think they have enough to survive, especially from a defensive point of view, because they, even if they may not be scoring enough, they're certainly keeping goals out a lot better than some of the other teams around them. So they should probably be able to survive. They have a better chance because they're doing well defensively. And as long as they get a goal or two and win a couple of games, I think that would be enough to help them survive the season. And then they can really push on, recruit the type of player they want to fit Potter's style and sort of work on the training ground as well over the preseason. And they can probably show us next season if they can push for, you know, a higher mid-table sort of finish. But that's obviously for next season. They need to survive this season. And we think that their defensive ability, allied with the fact that the quality of the players that they have at the club, will probably help them survive to go with the sort of style of play that Potter is trying to establish. So, yeah, that's what we have for this week's episode, where we've covered three of the teams who are in the relegation fight. Next week, we'll look at the other three teams who are currently battling to stay in the Premier League. And we will, again, dissect them tactically and try to see if their tactics can, and what their tactics are, and whether they can help them stay in the Premier League for this year, for next season. So, yes, thank you so much for listening in. I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, do let us know if there are any topics or themes that you want us to cover on the podcast or on the website in the form of an article. As a reminder, the Twitter handle for our website is at Total Analysis, and the website itself is www.totalfootballanalysis.com. It's been a pleasure recording this for you guys, and it's been a pleasure having you on as well, Mac, as always. Thank you so much for taking out the time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Harsha.
Yep.
Nice show.
Yep. So hopefully we'll have you guys tune in next week where we'll look at the other three teams in the relegation battle. And till then, stay safe. Also, in the current environment, please, guys, wash your hands and just keep yourselves safe with everything that's going around. And we will see you next week. Thanks a lot, guys.